To another edition of the E Factor, brought to you by the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Shan Sheridan with the Clinton County Chamber and also the Clinton County Economic Development Organization here in Frankfort, Indiana. So glad to be with you once again. We have another great show for you tonight. You know what the E Factor stands for? It's the E-tributes of a community. Not the attributes, but the E-tributes. Yes, engagement, entertainment, education, employment, and of course, entrepreneurialism. And we have a lot of things to discuss today because our special guest is all the way from Rwanda via Texas Christian University, who's been staying with us for this past week. And we've been so happy, my wife and I, to open our home up to John Vier. And you're going to have to pronounce your last name, John Vier.
Jean-Vier Rousseau.
Close, not too bad. And Jean-Vier, that is a French name?
Jean-Vier is a French name.
Jean-Vier.
It just means January.
January?
Yes. I was born in January, so I think
okay.
My parents just called me January because I was born in January.
Okay.
And it happened to be in French.
Wow.
Yes.
But you actually have your own language in Rwanda.
Yes. Yes, we do. We call it Kinyarwanda.
Yeah.
That's the native language. Most of people speak it, so it's the only native language we have. But we also have other three languages that are officially used, English, French, and Swahili on top of Kinyarwanda. So four languages.
So you speak all?
I do not. I speak English and Kinyarwanda fluently, and some French and then some Swahili.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we're going to hear some before the interview's over, so we'll talk. So we'll be thinking about what you can share with the E Factor audience. And we were talking a little bit off the air what we're going to talk about. And folks, let me just give you a little bit of a background with our guest. Now, you've asked that I could call you Jay because it's a little easier. So I'm going to call you Jay.
Oh,
is that okay?
Okay.
Well, Jay has been. Been in the United States for about the past 4 years, correct?
That's correct.
And you were selected as one of the top students in Rwanda to come over to the United States and participate in an educational program. And you were able to choose a university. You were able to apply to a variety of different universities in the United States, and you were you chose Texas Christian University. Down in Fort Worth.
Yes, that's correct. I came through a program called Bridge to Rwanda program, and it is a program that selects high school graduates and go through interviews and like a normal application process. And what they do is train those selected scholars to really be able to be competent on an international level. So we go through studying for the standardized tests like SAT or TOEFL, the test of English language, of English as a foreign language, and be able to really increase our English potential to an international standard. Because back home we're not really, our education system is quite different from the system like in the United States or Canada or other countries in the Europe. So, for example, I wasn't really used to reading books. I would have like a professor or a teacher in high school read the book and then make summaries of notes and then write on the board and then we'll write back. And then when he asks the question, we'll just give them back what they asked. So it was quite different. Because here in the United States, you have to bring to the table what you've learned. You have to read the book by own. So that's what we learned in Bridge to Rwanda, to critically think for ourselves and see what we can discuss and bring to the table. So it was a program of about 16 months, and they help us through all that academic part, and they also help us apply for universities and our earned scholarships to come to the United States, because the education here is good quality, but also it's very expensive. So scholarships really help us to follow our dreams to come here and get a better education.
So you were actually, I mean, there was a lot of information kind of poured into you in a very short period of time before you came over to to the this country.
Yes, it was. They call it an intensive program. It's a intensive training because.
And you're selected on which did you take a test, and you're selected at based on intelligence.
Yeah. So the criteria is I don't know, remember all of them how they are, but the main things is how you did in high school. We mm-hmm. do how you did in the national exams, because we do take a national exam after high school, and what you did in high school as extracurricular activities. And all that. So that's the first phase. After being selected in that phase, then you sit for a written test, a written English test, and to see where you are. And then they select from that. And after that, you do interview. Mm. Now, other groups, other cohorts behind us, they will actually do multiple interviews. Mm. I had to do one, but others now doing multiple interviews to be selected. So it's a rigorous really process to get into the program itself. And the first thing they tell us when you get into the program is that scholarships or getting admitted into a school is not a guarantee. Hmm. You have to work for it. They Right. will provide the resources to be able to get there, but it's our part to really work for it. So after getting into the program, it's not like you're done. Right. You have to even work harder, because there are other smart people out there who are competing for the same opportunities.
Sure. In your country.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did it feel like when you found out that you were selected? You went through all of this intense training. You were able to meet the qualifications, and now you have been selected. Your parents had to be very proud of you.
Yes, they were very happy. Well, I had to explain what it is, really, because they didn't know quite what mm-hmm. it was. And it was quite a risk on my part, because I had a scholarship to go to a local university. I had to give that away on the hopes that I'm going to do well enough to be able to go to.
So there was no guarantee when you gave that local scholarship up that you would win a scholarship in the U.S.
No, there wasn't.
Well, so there was a risk factor.
Very, very risk.
An entrepreneurial spirit that you are. You took the risk, and it paid off.
Yes, the return at the end was higher than the risk.
Yes. And you looked at this opportunity coming to the U.S. as really a life-changing experience. Would you say?
Yes, because the United States is already a developed country. Mm-hmm. We are developing at a high rate. So it's been really an honor for me to be in this kind of experience, to see how do you run your businesses here mm-hmm. from a theoretical standpoint, but also getting to do some internships here and see how some of the things are run here. And what kind of opportunities, what kind of talents can I borrow and then take them back to be able to contribute to also the development of my country?
So you end up selecting TCU, Texas yes. Christian University. More than likely, you just selected Texas because it's, it's close to African summers and African heat, probably a little bit better winters than Purdue or IU or Michigan State that I think you were talking about as well. But what was the biggest surprise for you to get when you got off that plane and you arrived at the U.S. for the first time? What was the biggest surprise for you?
Well, so the first surprise, it's funny you just talked about the heat and mm-hmm. So the weather. We have really a mild weather, I would say, compared to Texas, because I was actually Googling it the other day, and it's about 56 to 86 degrees Fahrenheit on average throughout the whole year.
In your home?
Yes.
In Rwanda?
Yeah, throughout the whole year. And in Texas, you can have some 100 and over 100 degrees sometimes.
Well, we're going to have that next week here. So, yeah.
So that heat really, I actually have a funny story around that, because we don't use much of air conditioning back mm-hmm. home, because it's most of the time nice.
Right.
So we don't use it in like normal homes. And so when we got at the airport, it was really nice inside. But it didn't really hit my mind. It's, hey, by the way, it's air conditioned here, because I was used not to being air conditioned. I was like, these Americans must be really, really spoiled. Is this what they call heat? But not until I really opened that door
outside.
Outside, this hot, humid, thick air hit me, and I was like, "Whoa, I can't breathe now."
Takes your breath away. That's absolutely right.
And so definitely. So that was the first thing, and then obviously the culture different. We have a different culture here. The United States, especially Texas, it's a mixture of cultures. You see Mexicans, you see the Texans with y'all and different accent. Well, you will see different from other states, because Texas.
Now, I'm from the South. I didn't have an accent. So.
So it was a mixture of cultures. It was quite opening to see the diversification of different cultures in that particular area. So,
what's the speed of life? Is it faster here in America than in Rwanda, or is it slower?
It is faster.
Yeah,
it is faster, and I got to learn it because everybody seems to be punctual and on moving really fast from one destination to another. Even if they have a lot of time to get there, they will move really, really fast. And it's very different from Rwanda. It's changing, because now we're picking up the pace. But
when becoming more westernized.
So there's definitely some influence from the west, the western part. But we're doing all we can to really preserve that culture, that part of the culture. But the influence is definitely there. The influence is definitely there, and speed of life, we're still slower, but we're getting there.
Because you drive about 40. You said earlier off the air we were talking about speed limits and things like that. But that's mainly because of the infrastructure is not necessarily developed as much as it is here in the U.S. What has been some of the biggest changes in Rwanda in your lifetime, as far as development and maybe infrastructure, maybe it's finance, maybe it's business, maybe it's retail. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen?
A lot has happened. And so I was born in 95.
Just a young guy.
So 95 was a few months after the genocide. So really, it was more of that time period where the government, the new regime, the new good regime was really focusing on unifying the community. Because in genocide, a neighbor killed a neighbor, and to build a country, you need everybody to pull their hands together. And you wouldn't pull the people together if they're hitting each other, if they don't like each other. So it was the first project, I would say, of the authority to bring people together again. So the unity and reconciliation was their first effort that they put in, and it worked out pretty well, because a neighbor would forgive a neighbor so that they can come together and work together. So in my lifetime, I've seen agriculture used to be the main driver of the economy. And it was mostly subsistence farming. And we still have some subsistence farming in Rwanda, but with land consolidation and specializing in crops in different districts or provinces, it's changing now to making it more of an agribusiness kind of environment. But what I'm getting at is it used to be an 80% agriculture type of economy in Rwanda. But if you look at it now, if you look at the statistics, agriculture is only a little over 30%, and now services are a little over 50%, and then the industry is less than a little less than 20%. So meaning that a lot has changed, whereby we're focusing on what can we add on the economy other than agriculture, so that we are diversifying our portfolio in the economy. The consulting, financial services, or accounting for all those to really push the economy. So all that I've seen in my lifetime, I've seen better hospitals. I've seen better schools being built. I've seen better infrastructure, especially in the city, and now it's expanding. I've seen water, running water, come to my house, which you used to go and fetch in a creek 5 miles away in the valley, come to my house. I've seen electricity come in my neighborhood. All that in just 24 years.
Wow. Now, and I can't imagine the things that your parents have seen, especially your parents living through the genocide period of time. Mm-hmm. It had to be a scary time for them.
Yes. Actually, my parents were not in the country.
So they were in a different country.
Yes. They were in Burundi, but they fled the country way before. So it was first, there was some tension for about some time since 1959, where the hatred started. And that's when the first people fled the country, mm-hmm. because they have started burning down their houses. So
what was the main purpose for that? I mean, you mentioned hate. What was the driving force behind the hate?
So it's really more of, so to really answer that question, I'll have to go back into colonization.
Yeah, like prior to 1963.
Yes, yeah. To colonization, because when the Germans
after World War II.
Yeah, so yeah. The Germans are the first one who came in Rwanda.
Right.
So, and they found Rwanda to be a very organized society. We had a king, we had three tribes, very organized. Every tribe, they had their own profession. However, a king happened to be from one tribe. So, the way the kingdom works, you know, the king is replaced by the son, it goes on and on. Right. So, all of a sudden, only one tribe is in power. So, the colonizers, so after the Germans, there came the Belgians. That they're the ones, after Germans failed,
they were defeated.
Lost the World War.
Yeah.
So the Belgians took over. And they're the ones who really implemented the divide and rule, divide and conquer kind of mentality, mm-hmm. where they started dividing the tribes, telling that the tribe that was not in the on power, tell them, by the way, these guys have been ruling you for years. Mm. You should take off. It was more of a changing the mindset of the tribe that was not in power to show them that, by the way, all this could be yours. So when I look at it, I blame not only the colonizers, mm-hmm. but also the people. Because
they allowed it to happen.
Yeah, they allowed it to happen, and it started small. It started saying, "Hey, we need to be in power. We need to be in power," and then started killing their neighbors who were in different tribe. So that's how my father fled to Congo, to the Democratic Republic of Congo, and then my mother moved to Tanzania later on. But that tension built up because genocide didn't happen overnight.
Right.
It just was the piling of the hatred. And then the new regime, after the kingdom, the new president was from the other tribe now. Mm-hmm. That was allegedly suppressed. Wow. as the colonizers.
So the shoe turned.
Yes. Yeah. So now they even started emphasizing that hatred on radio stations. Mm. Those are not our people. We're not the same. They're not of this country. They came from other countries. They came to like random ridiculous comments that were going on there.
Yeah.
So they build this kind of system to make people on a local community subconsciously start to hate their neighbors.
Mm.
And then it build up, and then the trigger happened to be the president got killed. They shut down his plane in 1994, April 6th. So then the government said, by the way, those neighbors of yours, that the ones who shut down that tribe that we told you about that we didn't like, they're the ones who shut you down. He shut the president down. Mm. Let's kill them. Wow. Oh, wow. And that's how it started. Mm. So the new regime, which had really started as a rebel, it was started by the children of the parents who fled the country in 59.
Wow.
So it was started by RPF, which was the name of the group. And they started it, and then they came to save their fellow Rwandans, and they're the ones who took the country from that place and then put in a new regime by liberating the country.
Which became a democracy.
It is, yes. Yeah. So it was after the king, after the independence, we had the presidency system, which was democracy, mm-hmm. as you
right.
would call it.
Right.
But it didn't really become a democracy yeah. after that, where everybody was allowed to
yeah.
to express their voice on who they want to
yeah.
to lead them.
So we got a quick history lesson of Rwanda. Let's talk about the future. When we think about entrepreneurialism, we mentioned that risk-taking. You've done that. That your future is very bright. You have a U.S. Education. You have a degree in business finance here at Texas Christian University. What is the future look like for you? What are you wanting to do in the world of finance? And I know we've talked about being an entrepreneur, maybe owning your own business someday.
Yeah.
What does that look like for you?
So the way it looks like, I've been away for 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been back here and there for a short time of period, and I'll be amazed by the change in that short of time. So the way I really like to say is, yes, I've had this great experience, great education, but I need to go back home and relearn my culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that works here in the United States might not necessarily work
right.
in Rwanda. Because, hey, it took the United States about 200 years to
yep.
build the economy that they have now. All I can't suddenly implement everything they have now into our economy. I just have to identify the need and leverage what I've learned and what's available and my network and my available resources on how I can improve what services I'll be providing to really address whatever need I will identify. So I have different interests for now. One of them including agriculture, financial services, as you mentioned. So my dream down the line is to have some type of conglomerate that includes all of those various potential businesses. But again, I need experience on the ground to really relearn what my people need.
And I've already planted the seed. You get the pineapple and you process the pineapple and you find a way to get the pineapple over here to the United States in the Sheridan household, and we'll buy a lot of pineapple and we'll make you a very, very rich man. So
that's a great business idea. I'll hold you
well,
to that.
But we were joking a little bit about that, but the agricultural opportunities are big in Rwanda and really Africa as a whole, the continent, because when I was in Liberia, the pineapple was outstanding. There was a variety. The rice was, I mean, there was a lot of good things there. The resources are rich, very rich in resources.
So Rwanda is, when it comes to resources, we don't have that many. Our president likes to say that the main resources we have is people.
Your people.
the people. And that's a really deep thinking when mm-hmm. it comes to that, because again, knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
Once we have knowledge, we can leverage what's available to make it work for us. So we might not have the resources, but we have our thinking capabilities.
Well, you have resourceful people.
Yes.
And when you have resourceful people, you find resources. You find yes. ways to make it work.
Definitely.
You know, we're talking a lot over here anyway in the U.S. right now, especially in our region, IoT. That's a big buzz mm-hmm. phrase, the Internet of Things, mm-hmm. Which is something that's been going on for a long time, but they finally put a phrase to it or put a word to it. I like to come up with a different phrase and say IOP, the Internet of People, because I believe that it is going to be the network of people that, because if you don't have people, you don't have things to use in the Internet. So mm-hmm. it is really about people, and I think your president is onto something.
Yes, I agree. It's all about people and really building those relationships and partnerships to leverage what we have so that we can achieve a common goal, because if you're doing something and all of a sudden and didn't know you're working on it and like do something that looks exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
if we meet on the market, there's no value added.
Yeah.
Maybe if we had partnered, maybe we could have made something
yeah.
even better.
Yeah. You've had a very busy week. You've been over here. You've gone to Beck's Hybrids. You've been to Frito-Lay, PepsiCo. You've been to ConAgra Foods over in Frankfurt. You've got to see a lot of things. It's been a pretty neat week this week.
Yes, it was
very
wonderful.
Jam-packed, very busy. You left early in the morning and you've come late back at night. In fact, we're talking late this evening, recording this as we normally do. And, of course, you're leaving very early in the morning, so you've got to get to bed here. But before you go, I wanted to go back and I want you to talk a little bit of Rwandan for us. And, you know, my wife will be listening to this, so I want you to wish her, you know, well in Rwandan. Would you do that for me?
Okay, so any specific thing you want me to
No, you can share anything that you feel comfortable with.
Okay. Let's see. Very interesting. All right. So, 잠이 아니랑 무심이래 고아라냐 치리에 이르무르구아오 고아람하이 구바하는 우리 심내를 날인디하노 냄자가 치료 칸디 나랍디심이에 문화코즈찬.
And remember, she's a Pacer fan. So.
Okay, Zakurish Kontraveko say, I know, I can't do a good Kufuga. Ariko Baskete, Ozaje, Komezukunde Pacers, there is Kudakunda LeBron.
No, I heard that.
Ariko Zigutina, no go.
So paraphrase what you said.
Do you want
to? We may not want to know. We've been laughing.
Yeah, I shouldn't. Yeah, yeah, I like to know. Yeah.
We've been laughing this entire week about the Pacers, and you're a LeBron James fan. And, of course, we struggle with LeBron because we're Pacer fans, you know. And Lance Stevenson and Victor and all the guys, Miles Turner. But I appreciate it. You got a beautiful language.
I just say that, I was thanking her for welcoming me at the house and allowing me to stay for this whole week. And then on the basketball side, I was saying, I understand you love the Pacers, and I know you don't like LeBron, but he got some talent, even though you don't like his character.
He does have talent.
Yeah.
He does have talent. There's no doubt there. Well, I tell you, John V, it's hard to believe that our 30 minutes is over. The show has come to an end. Thank you very much. We wish you all the very best, and we certainly wish you safe travels. And we know you're going to be a success wherever you land. And if you do stay in Rwanda, and we know that you're going to have a bright, bright future. And we just want you to come back and visit us when you can.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been an honor to be here in Frankfort, Indiana.
Absolutely. And speaking for Frankfort, Indiana, I'm Shan Sheridan. I want to remind you again that you are – possibly the one that may engage someone out on the street, or maybe someone in your life. Maybe you're the hope in someone's life. Maybe you're the answered prayer in someone's life. You never know who may be watching you, or maybe you're the one that can really reach them and make a difference in their life. Something to think about this week as we go through another week. We certainly hope you have a great one, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much for listening.